On today's podcast, we'll be covering all the updates of the last week. We'll look at some injuries and streamers. Plus, we'll do a rookie review today where we'll take a deep dive into rookies who have been called up already, plus some that are on the way. That's today on Fastball Fantasy Baseball.
This is Fastball Fantasy Baseball with Taylor Tarter and Matt Kirk. Let's get into it.
We're going to start off today looking at who had the best performance in matchup number 4. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. Angels first baseman outfielder Jared Walsh went 9-for-26. That's a 3.46 batting average, 5 runs, 3 home runs, and 9 RBI. You know, it was not a super exciting offensive week last week. Usually somebody will get into like 4 or 5, 6 home runs.
Yeah.
You know, somebody goes off, but like nobody went off this week. It was very quiet. It was also very quiet for pitching too, but we'll get to that. So Jared Walsh is batting 260 on the season, been kind of up and down. I feel like before this week, he was batting like 230 something. And then, you know, I was looking and this is a legit 260. The BABIP is actually a little lower than his norm. So he may end up raising his batting average a little bit more, 270 or so. On top of that, he's got really great hard contact numbers, 10% barrel rate, 44% hard hit rate, not like elite, but like pretty solid. And his home run to fly ball rate is also 6% lower than his career average. So those are all things that I really like to see, to say that he's doing pretty good right now. He could be doing even better. I think maybe we see a home run outburst coming maybe this week, probably in the next couple weeks. On top of that, his chase rate is down 5%. However, he is making less overall contact with all pitches inside the zone, outside the zone. Despite that, I'm a pretty big Walsh fan. I know you are too.
Yeah, this gigantic Walsh fan. With that said, he, super streaky guy, right? I mean, last year he had a great first half and then was non-existent pretty much in the second half. And I think outside of this, that there were so many games rained out last week that it was kind of hard to hard to like be excited about these weekly numbers because there's true. So many people missed games, you know? But good kudos to Jared Walsh. You know, it's great to see a week like this. Big fan of the guy. And he always comes at a value, right?
Yeah, and an honorable mention hitter here, Pete Alonso, had 5 runs, 3 home runs, and 8 RBI. He had, that's a 3.57 average. Last week, he's up to 7 home runs on the season, but his home run to fly ball rate is still suppressed. And I think that's a guy that could get up in the 40s this year. And for pitching, Arizona starting pitcher Zach Gallen, 13 innings pitched, 10 hits, 2 earned runs, no walks, 12 strikeouts, and 2 quality starts. He also won both of his games that he pitched in last week. He had a 1.35 ERA last week and a 0.75 WHIP. So the question is he back, quote unquote? You know,
I really hope so. I freaking love this guy. You're worried. You know, I think we know that he's kind of changed his pitch mix a little bit. And the K's maybe not as what they were. Big fan of the guy. I mean, he throws 4 or 5 pitches and constantly keeping people off balance. Really, really, really like the guy a lot.
Yeah, and so his K9 rate has gone down from 10 the last couple of years to 8 this year. And like you said, the pitch mix seems to be like, that's what I would point my finger to there. He's barely using his slider, and that's a good like out pitch. That's a good whiff pitch. So he's also dropped his walks per 9 rate pretty dramatically by like 2 or 3, down to 1.2 walks per 9, which is really good. He does have a low BABIP and he hasn't given up a home run yet. So that ERA is going to go up from, you know, 1 point, whatever it is right now. And he could be a good hold. I maybe would be looking to sell high right now. You know, if he was striking out 10 batters per nine innings, then maybe I think I'll hold on to him and kind of ride the couple of games that he's going to have over the next month that are going to get his ERA up in the threes. But I think this might be it. This might be a good trade high time for him. Mm-hmm. And then some honorable mention pitchers. The only other pitchers with two quality starts this past week are Max Fried, and that's it. So only two pitchers total, Zach Gallen and Max Fried. So just really important to see, like, quality starts are rare, are getting more rare. And so not only finding a two start pitcher that you can count on in a given week, but also a two start pitcher going deep into games is super, super, super important. So, you know, follow our Twitter and we'll help you out with finding some two start streamers that could get you some quality starts and some wins. And then a couple more honorable mentions: Shohei Ohtani, 7 innings pitched, 11 Ks, no walks, none earned, 0 ERA. He had 2 wins and a quality start. And he may be one of the best starting pitchers in baseball this year, but the hitting is lagging behind. You know, it's not the same Ohtani as last year that won the MVP, yeah. But, you know, might win a Cy Young.
There you go.
And then Dylan Cease, 12 innings pitched last week, 19 strikeouts and a quality start. This looks like a, you know, people want to say last year was a breakout. This year is a breakout for Cease.
No, man, he's super impressive this year.
It's incredible. All right, let's cover a few important injuries.
Ouch, baby. Very ouch.
So we've been getting pretty lucky with not a ton of big injuries lately, but this last week wasn't so great. We're going to have some COVID stuff to go over this week. So as far as injuries, a couple Boston starting pitchers, James Paxton, his return is being delayed because of elbow soreness. Chris Sale, his return is getting delayed. It's very mysterious the way they're talking about it. It's not like an arm thing they're saying, but it's also not COVID. So is he like sick or is it something else? Like, they're being really mysterious about it. And then Rich Hill has COVID, and so that Boston rotation is getting all jacked up. Chicago Cubs starting pitcher Marcus Stroman, he hit the IL Sunday for an undisclosed reason, which usually means COVID if it's an undisclosed reason. So again, you're going to hear that quite a bit. Cincinnati starting pitcher Luis Castillo. So we're recording this on Monday. So he returned on Monday. The reason we're not talking about how he did is because when you listen to this on Wednesday or Thursday or Friday or whenever, we won't know. So he's coming back.
It'll be fun to kind of like look back at it too. You know, I mean, he's such like a fantasy darling, right? He's got all these great metrics and everybody really expects him to just be like a top 5 pitcher every year. So, you know, always watching Luis Castillo, but we'll see how the start goes.
We'll see how it goes. We can
just record different responses, you know, and then the day we post it, we'll just like insert, he did great today.
We should think about doing that. Dodgers starting pitchers Andrew Heaney and David Price, they are traveling with the team, but they're still not off the IL, and it seems like Price might be a little bit closer than Haney. So I'm curious to see how that shakes out. Do they have David Price start? Do they use him like as a piggyback guy? Maybe put him with like Gonsolin in a game. Curious there. Miami reliever Dylan Floro, he is on a rehab assignment this week. He could be close to return and he should compete for saves in that bullpen. Who did the Bednar is no, not Bednar. Bender is there now, and he's been getting saves. I think he has like 5 or 6 saves, maybe more, but he's got like a 4 ERA, so I don't think he has that role on lock.
Yeah.
But Dylan Floro, interesting name there. Milwaukee outfielder Andrew McCutchen, COVID. Philly starting pitcher Zach Wheeler and Zach Eflin, COVID. St. Louis starting pitcher Adam Wainwright, COVID. So lots of that going around. Minnesota shortstop Carlos Correa has like the finger bruise thing going on. They thought it was fractured. And he said, I think over the weekend, like Tuesday, was unrealistic for a return. I just wonder how much longer he's going to be out. And we'll talk about Royce Lewis a little later, who has replaced him or has taken his spot on the roster for now. But so we'll talk about that situation a little later when we cover our rookies. Oakland starting pitcher Cole Irvin, who has been doing really well, but has gone out with shoulder tendonitis. Not something you want to see. Shoulder stuff is not good, and usually you're sitting for a while with that sort of thing. Speaking of shoulders, San Diego shortstop outfielder Fernando Tatis. The recent news is that he's running and fielding, but he hasn't swung a bat and he hasn't thrown. So, I mean, is 3 months realistic? Like, is June realistic? I don't know at this point. That does not look good. And then San Diego outfielder Blake Snell is making his third rehab start this week. I imagine it's just basically to get him stretched out. And stretched out for Blake Snell is 5 innings. So he may return over the next weekend, over this weekend or next week. But we said this last week, or at least I said this last week. I'm not adding him. I am not a believer. And then finally here, Toronto starting pitcher Hyunjin Ryu is going to return from the IL to make a start over the weekend. If you roster him, make sure you make sure you're watching and you get him on your roster. And if this week has taught us anything, it's that you have to have a contingency plan for COVID. And so with that being said, let's look at some streamers for the week ahead.
Am I streaming?
So our first streamer here is Oakland starter James Kaprielian, who has Detroit on Thursday, May 12th. He is rostered in 3% of ESPN leagues, so he is definitely available and probably is available in anything but like 15-team leagues, I would imagine. So he's got a good strikeouts per 9 in his first 2 games. It's up over 10, but his walks per 9 is 7, so that is not good. However, Detroit is a good matchup. They strike out a bit, and so he may not get the win with pitching for Oakland, but he should get plenty of strikeouts, and they seem like they're letting him go. So that's an interesting name I would consider for Thursday. On Friday the 13th, you have Cubs pitcher Drew Smyly against Arizona. He's rostered in 4.4% of ESPN leagues. His strikeouts per 9 is down despite throwing more cutters and curveballs, but his X stats think all those pitches should be better. So I picked him up and kind of held on to him in our league, good streamer in the right matchup.
Something about me has concern for Arizona's lineup. I feel like they're like advanced metrics for as a team. We started the season and they were really bad. They were like putrid. And recently they've been kind of tying some things together. So I love Drew Smyly. I would personally kind of proceed there with caution. Just have this gut feeling Arizona's going to start hitting the ball. Pavin Smith and Alec Thomas being up now, and Ketel Marte. I just feel like they're going to start hitting for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, they have been scoring more. They're officially out of the worst 10 run differential teams, but they are in their 1, 2, 3, 4th worst, like fourth most strikeouts for their batters. Mm. So that's kind of what I'm leaning on is, you know, Smiley might not get the win, mm-hmm. but the ratios should and could be good, mm-hmm. and the strikeouts could be good, and he's available in like 95% of leagues. Yeah. So like if you're in a deep league, he's great, but you know, like in like an 8 or a 10 team mixed, you probably don't need him in that sort of league. Mm-hmm. But if you're like desperate and you're looking for a streamer, then
this is a good flyer.
It's yeah. a good, I think it's a good dart throw. Angels starting pitcher Michael Lorenzen has Oakland on Saturday the 14th. He is rostered in 22% of ESPN leagues, not getting a ton of strikeouts, but he's been really good in the right matchups. And I picked him up. I picked him up like a week or two ago in our league, and I've just been holding on to him. He's put a couple good games together. Oakland has one of the worst run differentials, and they are top 10 in most batting strikeouts. So I think this is a great game for him, for Lorenzen, and might get his K rate up a bit. And then Detroit starting pitcher Michael Pineda has Baltimore on Saturday the 14th as well. He's available in like 95% of leagues. He's only rostered in like 5.5% of ESPN leagues. He's another low K pitcher like Lorenzen, but again, has been doing well in the right matchups. He's only had one really bad game. And again, Baltimore in the top 10 of most strikeouts for their batters, in the top 10 of worst run differentials. So, you know, where there's certain teams, it seems like you can pick on, and every week it changes like a little bit. Like Atlanta is now out of the worst run differentials. They're still number one in most strikeouts though. So, you know, that's something to consider, but like mm-hmm. Cincinnati, Baltimore, and Oakland this week are teams that you really, really, really want to target. Mm-hmm. So Dodgers pitcher Tony Gonsolin has Arizona on Monday the 16th. He is rostered in 40% of ESPN leagues. So, you know, he's less available than some of these other guys. Looking at like what he's doing, I don't think he's going to stay this good for much longer. So, you know, if you look, what you'll see is a very low BABIP, a low home run to fly ball rate, and a low strikeouts per nine rate. And those aren't things that typically mesh well long-term, mm-hmm. but this is a good matchup again, and could get a win that, you know, that's there, could get some strikeouts. So I like Tony Gonsolin. Probably would, if, you know, to our conversation earlier, probably would lean Gonsolin over Smiley against Arizona. Mm-hmm. If Gonsolin is out there. And then we have Cleveland starter Cal Quantrill has Cincinnati on Tuesday the 17th. He's rostered in over 60% of leagues, so this is a shallow league streamer for sure. Same situation as Gonsolin. Low BABIP, low home run to fly ball rate, low K9 right now, but a really, really good matchup. And then Chicago Cubs starter Wade Miley is supposed to be back. He's scheduled to be back next week or over the weekend. And if things go right, he'll have Pittsburgh on Tuesday the 17th. And he's rostered in like 4.5% at ESPN League. So he's out there. Nice little stash maybe this week for next week. And, you know, good matchup against Pittsburgh.
One gentleman I'd like to kind of draw attention to, his name is Josh Winder. He's a rookie this year. He's had back-to-back, like, really great starts. Granted, his last one was against Oakland, but he's gone six innings for both of his last two starts, giving up one run. and none, it was not earned, averaging 7.5 Ks over these six innings. He's scheduled to either pitch on the 12th against Houston or potentially the day after. So Josh Winder, somebody worth keeping your eye on after two really good starts. The first of which was against Tampa Bay, which is a good team to have a good start against.
Yeah, I'm looking here. You know, if we're telling you to target a few teams, so the Reds this week have Milwaukee and Pittsburgh. So if there's any Milwaukee pitchers that are available, probably Hauser. Yeah. If he's out there, good add this week. Pittsburgh pitchers, maybe like Keller or Brubaker, somebody like that. Baltimore has St. Louis and Detroit, and they're away through the whole week. So they're not playing in Camden the whole week. So that is a really good matchup for St. Louis pitchers and Detroit pitchers. And then for the A's, they are playing Detroit, it looks like, and
Angels.
And the Angels, yes. So, you know, again, so you have some pitchers you can target there against those teams. So even the ones that are, you know, rostered very lightly could be very valuable. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back to do a rookie review right after a word from our sponsor. So we wanted to take a look at some rookies who have come up in the last few weeks, do a little look ahead to potential call-ups over the rest of the season, and just kind of see like where we're at, like a temperature check kind of with some of these guys. Some have been struggling, some have been looking really good, some have been, you know, in between. So we wanted to take a look here and run through a few that are interesting to us.
I think that's the best thing about fantasy baseball, is to jump on a rookie when he first gets the call and ride that train to whatever destination it takes you. You know, you always want to be the guy who's on that train that takes you to the promised land with a rookie. And I think everybody felt that way with, say, a Suzuki. That first week, totally electric. And after a completely dynamite start to the season, and his teammates like Wilson Contreras saying, quote, "He's the best player I've ever played with," end quote. It was on April 18th that Seiya made a claim through an interpreter that he doesn't look at opposing pitcher data, and then he prefers to just adjust on the fly after having his own experience. Well, Seiya, it's a little different than the NPB right here. And you know, he's since making that comment hitting .170 in his last 16 games. So yeah, his triple slash is .170, .246, .271.
It's really bad.
So bad. So the thing about it, Seiya, is if you're not studying opposing pitchers, they are without question studying you.
Yep.
And you've been exposed, unfortunately. You're going to have to make an adjustment. And, you know, that's one of these things where I don't know if everybody necessarily even knows that this has been going on with Suzuki, because we're still riding that high from, you know, a great international debut, right? And it's something to be happy about for sure. I wish he kind of hits the books a little bit here and starts to learn a little bit. But, yeah, tough adjustment afterwards.
Yeah, he had the number one chase rate, like the best chase rate in baseball for like 2 weeks, and then now it's kind of like normalized a bit. He's in the 20s, I think, but his quality of contact is still really good, really really solid barrel rate at 15%, and then his hard hit rate is 40%. So when he's making contact, it's good contact, but the plate discipline metrics are where he's been kind of faltering a bit. But I think he's still a solid option, but I don't think he's the player that we thought he was that first week of the season.
Yeah, yeah. Another guy, Stephen Kwan, just completely lights out on fire and fuego, like the first week. All anybody could talk about, actually, Stephen Kwan.
I way, way overpaid for him in a bad league. Way overpaid for him. And well, I totally regret it.
So here's the thing. I don't think it's necessarily worth regretting so far. I mean, he spent some time in the IR, right? He had that thing where he ran into the outfield wall against the Yankees, and then he hurt his hammy. But I think he's going to be a serviceable player simply because of his plate discipline. You know, he was never going to be able to keep up the torrid pace that he had going on. But I think particularly in a points league, rest of season, certainly rosterable. Is he going to be worth the fab budget that you probably blew on him? I think if you hammered it out at the end of the year, maybe you'd say, man, probably worth a little bit less. But, you know, in a five outfielder league or a points league, I think, you know, he's a serviceable player.
I agree. I think he's a better option for points leagues because they value walks and they value like discipline. And he's an extremely disciplined hitter, but I like at one point needed average and runs so bad that I just kind of like I way overpaid him, and it's a categories league. And so I kind of figured like, you know, he was going to like continue because he is so disciplined. But what I realized is he's not really going to get you anything else, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to get you batting average. He's going to score runs. And that's about it. So that's kind of why I regret paying so much for him. I thought, you know, there was going to be more to come, but he's still valuable, but I would say in a points league more than any other format.
Yeah. And it certainly helps hitting in front of Jose Ramirez, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So you get the runs, maybe a couple steals here and there. Could he finish the year with 15 home runs? I think that's kind of our ceiling here, but we'll see.
I think maybe 10 is a ceiling.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. He did it in AAA, though. Like, he showed that he had the numbers. He hit 15 home runs in AAA. You know, we'll see. I'm still a believer. I like the player. I also like Matt Brash a lot. He looks really good in GIFs that you see online. He's got that nasty slider. It looks like he should be striking out 10 to 12 guys a game, but the Ks weren't really there for the kid. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's done for the year. And then you have this emergence with George Kirby too over the weekend. It makes it easier for the Mariners to do what they've done. They devoted Matt Brash. I think that he probably will get the call again and possibly in this long reliever role kind of situation, but if you put a lot of capital into Matt Brash, I feel like you're super regretting it right now, and that's probably for the right reasons.
Yeah, I definitely see him in a relief role in the future, and you know, I to be honest, I'm surprised they sent him down and didn't let him figure things out in the like. Why didn't they just put him into a relief role in the majors? Mm-hmm. Like, my thing with that is it's not like he's going to get better playing against easier competition. Mm-hmm. Right. Let him struggle and learn in the majors against better competition. And I think you're going to end up with a better pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, you know, case by case basis, I don't know what is mental capacity or his emotional capacity is to handle stuff like this. But yeah, I was surprised too. It seemed like he had a short leash on him. And certainly to me seemed like he deserved a longer leash just based off of, mm-hmm. you know, I think it comes down to, you know, your pitching coach having to go over what your pitch mix is. And he's got one of the best pitches in baseball. You got to figure out a way how to deploy it in the right situations. He'll be back. He's not done yet. Another guy not done yet, but certainly the numbers are surprising to look at, would be Hunter Green, pitcher for Cincinnati Reds. His first start, I mean, everybody was talking about the blazing 100 and something mile per hour fastball, and we were all drooling about it, really for the first couple starts. But now, you know, we have some data here, and that 100 plus mile an hour fastball has a 361 batting average against it. You know, major league hitters figure these things out. And if your pitch is just fast and doesn't have enough movement, well, guess what? They're going to tee off on you. And the other thing about it is he's throwing this pitch 60% of the time. The kid needs just more experience. I think he's a long-term hold. Just it's hard. Can't teach speed, right? But you can teach, you know, how to pitch. Mm-hmm. But in a redraft, I would try to sell before really the excitement completely burns out here, and try and capitalize on some way or form in a position that you need improvement on.
I think depending on the size of the redraft league, like, I don't think you're going to be able to sell him. I think you're dropping him.
Yeah. Most likely.
Yeah. The K9 is enticing. He's got a 12.5 strikeouts per nine, and he's definitely been pitching into some bad luck. 346 batting BABIP and a 30% home run to fly ball rate. So like you said, batters are just like teeing off on him. But he does have other issues, right? He's not on a good team. He's not going deep into games. And really, for me, it's just really hard to justify holding on to him unless you're in a like a super deep dynasty league. Like, that's the only place I could see where I would want to like hang on to him, where I could just like stash him and bench him and that's it. Mm-hmm. And then hope he figures it out.
Why don't we just kind of go through a quick list of guys who we think are pretty good, worth rostering, versus guys that maybe necessarily in a redraft league aren't really that hot right now. How do you feel about Joey Bart?
Interesting name, good prospect pedigree, but like as catcher, I feel like you can kind of like stream if you don't have a Will Smith or something like that. So I don't know. He's just kind of like a guy to me, you know, in that
he's a jag.
Yeah. In that, like, maybe 15, 20 catcher range, something like that you could like throw in there for a week if he gets hot, and then, you know, throw him back into the pool if he cools off. So
I think catcher 5 to catcher 20 is basically the same thing. I mean, catchers have been so bad this year. We're going to eat a little bit of crow on Dalton Varsho, right? I mean, I was not on the Varsho team either.
Me neither.
And he's, I think he's far and away catcher 1 right now at this point. I mean, South Resin looked really that great. Will Smith's batting like 230. Like, you know, and Grandal has barely showed up to do anything. The catching position is at a complete loss right now. So, you know, I think Joey Bart has a higher ceiling than what he's been displaying. And like I said, if you don't have one of those top like 3 or 4 guys, he's just as good to me as at 20 as the number 5 catcher would be.
Yeah.
But you know, he's a rookie, so it's fun to roster. That's the way I feel about it sometimes. Jeremy Pena of Houston. I really like this kid. I mean, he's filled the Correa void pretty well. I think you're going to see a long-term success with him. Obviously Dusty loves the guy. Somebody like Torkelson though, pretty bad thus far.
Not looking good.
Yeah. Guy that we should probably in a redraft, in my same assessment as Hunter Green, where maybe you try and trade him before people really figure out he's bad. I think that might be the way you want to look at Torkelson. But obviously, long-term hold first base position is not good, you know, in the dynasty aspect of things. So Tork's going to have some weight there. And, you know, no reason to necessarily panic. Long-term, he should be fine. Terrible start to the year. Kind of dreary outlook for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think it's important to distinguish, like, if you're in a dynasty league, you're probably holding on to all these guys we're going to mention, right? Like a long-term dynasty league, you're not letting any of these guys go, really. But if you're in a redraft or maybe like a shallower, like keeper league where you're keeping like 8-5 guys, something like that, like then maybe you're letting some of these guys go. And Torkelson is one of those guys who I let go in one of those keeper type leagues. It's a shallower league too. I let him go into the player pool because he just wasn't performing. So
mm-hmm. What do you think about Bobby Witt Jr.?
He's picking things up. It was a slow start, but BABIP was down and he's looking a lot better. So I think BABIP's going to keep coming up. He's going to keep doing better. And I think the hype will turn out to be real.
Mm-hmm. Julio Rodriguez definitely turning it around before our very eyes. What do you think, or what do you kind of expect from him rest of the season?
Could go 2020.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's got 8 or 9 steals already at this point. I mean, the steals is not something I necessarily knew was going to happen like this. I mean, I think he leads the league in steals. I'm pretty sure he leads the league in steals. That's crazy. Considering he didn't even get on base, you know, at all.
Yeah. It was a really slow start. I think a lot of people were like, Is this a Kelenic situation again with another Seattle outfielder? But I think he is picking things up a little quicker.
I don't even know what to do with Kelenic. I don't even know. What do you do? I think, I don't know. And now you got Kyle Lewis coming back. Haniger's going to come back eventually. That outfield is so stacked and so crowded. Kelenic's in trouble, man. All right, well, Riley Green is not a guy I've paid too much attention to. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit on him. I know he's with Detroit and outfielder, and you know, there's a pedigree there. But you know, do you see any kind of impact coming from Riley Green rest of the season?
I mean, I think there's a path to playing time there. They don't have a ton of established outfielders. So, you know, they traded for Austin Meadows, who's hurt right now. But I think maybe mid, late summer call up, maybe a September call up, August, September, something around there, injury call up. But, you know, he's got good prospect pedigree, good bat. So it'll play.
I saw that today, like when we started the podcast, actually, it looked like Akil Baddoo may have gotten demoted. Which was a surprise to me. Maybe I read that wrong too, but Wednesday listeners, maybe Akil Baddoo might be in the minors right now. moving on, Adley Rutschman, what a guy. Everybody, you know, really high ceiling, best drafted catcher since Johnny Bench. You know, why don't you elaborate a little bit on Adley Rutschman for us?
He was out for a while with the triceps injury, like a tricep strain or something. But since he's been back, he's batting 300. And I think this is an impact bat at catcher. And I could see him up in like July, maybe sooner if he keeps raking. But I think this is an impact bat at catcher. I don't see him on the same level as like a Bart.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Obviously, the pedigree is huge. And in a points league, you know, the catcher position has been so bad that you might be rostering a catcher that is only scoring like, you know, 4 or 5 points for the week because they're striking out. If you see a late June, early July sort of thing here, it might be worth it for you the risk versus reward, just rostering a guy who's going to give you zero while you're forgoing a couple points every week, probably would be worth your time.
Yeah, and I think Baltimore would have called him up by now if he didn't start the season injured.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like anybody's blocking him in Baltimore.
No. The time is now. He's due to get the call for sure soon. I'm a Phillies fan. Bryson Stott, man, we were all so hot for the guy at the start of the year. He made the team out of camp. Had to send him down because he wasn't playing too well. Did get the call up again recently. Watched a couple of his at-bats over the weekend. But the thing about it is he's only up because Didi Gregorius got hurt. I don't know what Didi's timeline here is, but Alec Baum has won the position, really. It looked like they were going to be jockeying around and splitting time. But Baum's really come around, and I think rest of season, unless Stott really turns it on, in the next week or so, maybe 10 days while Didi's out. Not somebody that you should seriously considering helping your team out for the rest of the year.
Yeah. And I would say also if Boehm like bottoms out, then that's another circumstance where you could see Stott taking up more time, but I don't think that's likely at this point.
That's a good point. I am completely unwilling to entertain that thought.
Or if like Boehm has a week where he has like 10 errors, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's probably
why. Then they might, you know, start throwing around the idea that we should put a different guy at the hot corner.
Yeah. I see we have in our lineup here, Mr. Cruz. Is that Ellie De La Cruz?
That is O'Neill.
Oh, it's O'Neill Cruz. There you go.
Yeah. So I think we were all surprised to see him in the minors, but his strikeout rate is up big time in AAA so far, 27%. And he's only batting 189 with two home runs, but he's got eight steals. So at least he's doing something there.
It's kind of crazy that the organization's excuse for saying he might need a little bit more time might be real.
Yeah.
It sounded like such nonsense when you first heard it from the Pirates, right? But, you know, the numbers don't lie, and it does appear that he needs to marinate a little bit longer. You know, who's been really good is Joe Ryan, though. I can't explain really how or why. We were talking about it before the podcast. He's not blowing anybody away. I guess he's just a pitcher, you know?
So I have to be honest, and what I'm going to say is borrowed. So I heard Eno Saris talking about this, that Joe Ryan is basically like all deception. It's his throwing motion, the way he throws. It's something like his elbow leads, and the way he holds the ball, it like hides the pitch from the batters. It like gives him an extra couple seconds of they don't know what he's throwing, or like an extra couple like milliseconds or whatever. And so it's all deception. So it's not like you said, he's not like blowing anybody away. It's all, him being able to fool the batters.
Well, I mean, that's part of the game there. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like the Nestor Cortez approach, where your delivery is all weird and, you know, you're throwing batters off just simply with deception, right? Mm-hmm. And it's proven to be effective. I recall Kenley Jansen doing weird things in between every other pitch, you know, and when he's closing games for the Dodgers back in the day.
If you're not throwing like 102 miles per hour, you got to do something, right?
Right. And there's cases and examples here to show that it's been effective in the past. A more sort of conventional pitcher here would be Mr. Mackenzie Gore, who we have a guy in our league, one of my very good buddies here, has held on to Gore. I think he ran into Mackenzie Gore's mom in 1994. And his mom said, I'm going to give birth to a baby and that baby's going to be a pitcher. And Paul said, I'm going to roster that kid as soon as he's born. And Paul has had Mackenzie Gore basically for the duration of, 25 years at this point.
Yeah. I mean, he got off to a rough minor league start, basically like had the yips, and turned it around this year, figured something out, and has looked good so far. 9 strikeouts per 9, doing well, good ERA, but there is probably some regression coming. So maybe a trade high candidate, dynasty leagues, you're probably holding and you're very, very happy, but could be an interesting trade high right now.
Man, if you were able to hold on to Mackenzie Gore through all the tumultuous reports over the last 2 years or so, kudos to you. Good job, Paul. recent call-up, Alec Thomas, very hyped prospect for the Arizona Diamondbacks, roped a double in his first game. He looked real fast running around the bases for that double. His triple A numbers might be a little bit inflated given the nature of the Pacific Coast League. Time and time again, we see that those numbers are kind of ridiculous based off of all the other AAA leagues. But he has a unique power speed combo and he's got great plate discipline. In my opinion, this is an ad now, particularly because the league hasn't really generated a whole deep pool of really good outfielders, right? I think we're all kind of hurting in some way or another, particularly in 5 outfielder leagues. This would be a really good guy to just go ahead, take the plunge, jump on the rookie.
Yeah, I wrote a preseason article for thegameday.com that he could make a run for rookie of the year. I kind of expected him to be an early call-up. And part of the reason why I think he could be in that consideration is, like you said, plate discipline, power, speed. So I think that's all legit. He's a good defender too. So his bat's going to keep him in the lineup, but his glove is also going to keep him in the lineup. And also there's not a ton of competition in that outfield with David Peralta and Pavin Smith, right? So it's not like one of those guys is going to keep him off the field, you know? So definitely a good add, I would say, in pretty much any league you're in.
Yeah. Another candidate that might be an early call-up, which is not what a lot of people thought here, would be Corbin Carroll. He's another Arizona Diamondback prospect, was a top 15 prospect going into last year. And then in his 7th game of the season, he ends up blowing out his shoulder on a home run swing. Trotting around the bases, it kind of looked a little weird, and then it ended up being that he actually needed surgery on the thing, had to sit out the entirety of last year. But he's kind of picked up right where he left off from 2021. He's hitting .326. He's got 9 homers, 8 steals. There's a really awesome article that came out recently on The Athletic by Zach Buchanan. I'd highly recommend it. It speaks to the guy's work ethic. He's essentially completely obsessed with the game of baseball to a nearly disturbing degree. You read the article and you're like, there's no way this kid isn't going to succeed. He's born to do this game. He's super fast. He's only 5'9", so people counted him out every single day of his life.
It's like an Altuve.
He's like an Altuve. He's good. He's an outfielder. And I tell you, these Diamondbacks, they got guys coming up here between Corbin Carroll, Alec Thomas. You were mentioning Perdomo, right?
Perdomo in the middle infield.
Yeah, and they have another guy named Jordan Lawler, who's getting rave reviews too. You know, I think the future's bright in Arizona. And Corbin Carroll, everyone predicted that he would be playing next year, get the call. But he's playing so darn well right now that it's kind of hard to keep him. He's only in double A, so maybe they promote him into triple A. He maybe gets a cup of coffee in September. But if he does get the cup of coffee, you're in the playoffs. Corbin Carroll, you need an outfielder. That's a guy. And moving forward, tying together with Adley Rutschman, We've got Mr. Rodriguez, Grayson Rodriguez, who is really annihilating AAA right now.
12 strikeouts per nine. 12 strikeouts per nine in AAA, 3.33 ERA. I think he's not very far away either. And I think it would be interesting to see him and Adley. They're pitching together right now. They're a battery in AAA right now. I would love to see them get called up at the same time and like be the battery in the MLB too. I think that would be super cool.
It would be such a great thing for the Orioles to do, who have literally nothing else to look forward to this season, to call them both up at the same time and have them make their debut on the same day.
Yeah.
Like, that would be so cool. We should go to that game. If that happens, we're going to go to that game. We're too close not to go to that game. And we only pay like $9 to go see him play anyway.
That's true. That's true.
And it's a great stadium. Additionally, we've got CJ Abrams that I really need to talk about. Personal preseason favorite of mine, CJ Abrams. It is so clear that he needed more time to sort of marinate it in the minors. He's batting 182. He's only got 10 hits of the season, one of which is a home run. That he only has one steal so far on the year is something I would have completely bet the house against. I cannot believe that he only has one steal. I actually made a bet that he would lead the league in steals.
That's a mistake.
It was terrible, right? But I thought he was going to be, you know, replacing Tatis for a long time. He was going to be able to like get on base and start. I thought he was going to have 10 steals by you know, the end of May for sure. And then he would work his way to the top of the order and then just always get on base and be in scoring position for these guys to hit behind him. But it hasn't really worked out like that.
No, he looks overmatched, and it seems more and more like he was called up basically because of injuries to other players. And he does have a 220 BABIP, so that kind of is part of that 182 batting average, but he's also not making very good contact. 4.5% barrel rate, 27% hard hit rate are really not good, and 40% chase rate is bad. And again, it kind of points to him being overmatched.
Yeah, I just hope to see him be able to adjust sort of as the season progresses. But I think once Tatis gets back, unless he's made these adjustments, you can see Abrams kind of just being sent down just to have the playing time and to grow a little bit more. Shane Baz coming back. The long-awaited return, the other side of the dual Shanes for Tampa Bay. Looks like he just I saw a report earlier today that he might be throwing bullpens, I think.
Yeah, and when I saw the 60-day IL designation and like elbow or forearm or whatever it was, I was like, no.
Yeah.
You know, another Tampa pitcher goes down. But
yeah,
I mean, he is throwing again, so looks good.
Yeah, good for him. Guy I was huge on, was kind of really hoping I could get my hands on this guy in preseason for all my teams. Tristan Casas, first base for the Boston Red Sox. To me, he's a long-term anchor there. Bobby Dalbec's had a terrible season so far. I think we might be able to see the call up sooner rather than later. I don't know, you know, if you have a lot of insight on Tristan Casas, but again, the position is not that deep. So should Casas get the call, you know, taking swings at Fenway too, in a lineup which you kind of hope and expect to kind of turn around eventually. They haven't been that good, but Story's got to turn around eventually, and Bogarts has been all right. You know, you got Rafi Devers. If you got this kid hitting behind all those guys, there's going to be opportunity.
He's somebody I would put on my watch list right now. And as soon as the notification comes up that he's being called up, I would try to add him.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree. We mentioned him a little earlier in the episode here, but George Kirby, what a great debut, huh?
Yeah. And, you know, something I look for with rookie pitchers is I look at their strikeouts per nine in the minors, and if you can see like consistently high strikeouts per nine, that usually translates to the MLB. So, you know, he's up in the 11, 12s, 13s for K9 in the minors. And so that probably translates to something like a nine strikeouts per nine, maybe low, you know, 10 strikeouts per nine. But the stuff translates as well. He's got a slider, cutter, curveball, sinker combo. So he doesn't throw like a traditional fastball, which I find interesting. At least he hasn't thrown it yet in the majors, but that pitch mix is going to lead to a lot of grounders, a lot of soft contact. So something good.
Mm-hmm. Another guy who's been on fantasy baseball radars for quite a while, Royce Lewis, shortstop for the Minnesota Twins. Playing time, I think, is now in question. We referenced earlier that Correa's injury was not as severe as we initially projected. Lewis, he's had a fantastic beginning to the season in AAA. He's reportedly made a really big swing adjustment, and it shows. He's got the 310 batting average with a 16% K rate, or walk rate, rather, and he's got eight steals. I mean, in my brain, he has 30-30 potential in the future at some point. But as for this season, it's kind of just a question of, you know, if he will get the at-bats this year. And it kind of is all riding on the Correa thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure we see him for much longer in the majors when Correa comes back. Like maybe he plays himself into a platoon role or something, but he seems like a guy that like they would want to get a bunch of playing time and keep improving. So I don't know if that happens in Minnesota.
Yeah. And they've got some unique things going on because they've got Luis Arias, who can play all over the field. They have a ton of injuries right now that I think they're going to start getting over shortly. But they did also call up Jose Miranda. I'm a huge fan of Jose Miranda. Again, I'm points league oriented more than not. And this guy also, he plays all over the field. Something I heard a lot of people say over the last year that he is like a Miguel Sano with significantly fewer Ks. And when I would hear that, I would question it. I think the problem here is we don't really see the advanced metrics coming out of the minor leagues too often. I would question that he has the same kind of exit velocity that Miguel Sano has, where he just completely matches the ball at 100 miles an hour. And that's why his batting is so high, right? The Aaron Judges of the world. Mm-hmm. These guys who hit the balls really hard. I don't know if Miranda is quite like that, but he's versatile and he's always putting the ball in play. And in a year where the league has introduced the humidor in every single stadium and the ball is now deadened, apparently, contact guys like Miranda, who are just recent call-ups, who play all over the field, should totally be on your radar. In years past, guys selling out for power would be universally rostered. But now those guys who sold out for power, if they continue to do that, that ball isn't going as far as it has in the years past. So give me the guys who really favor contact and balls in play rather than power, because I think the game has changed this season comparatively.
Yeah, and like similar to pitchers with a track record of like really high K9, for batters that get called up, one of the things I'm looking at is their K rate. And if they consistently have a low K rate, like good plate discipline in the minors, that's also something that usually transfers over, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's a guy like that where he's not going to strike out very much, but to another point you made, there's not a ton of hard contact there. So he's, you know, maybe they get it. He gets into double digits, and this is if he stays, right? If he stays up, you could see him get into double digit home runs. But I don't know if I would bank on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's going to be really interesting when everybody gets healthy for that team and what they do with a guy like Miranda and Royce Lewis, of course. Do they want Lewis playing second base? Probably not. Probably just want him playing short. And then finally, I think really one of the biggest guys, maybe we should even headline with this, Max Meyer has been absolutely a complete menace in AAA. 39 Ks and 31 in a third innings. He's got a 1.72 ERA. In a few or maybe just one more bad start from Eliezer Hernandez, and it sounds like Meyer might be getting the call, which is a little sooner than I had anticipated. I really thought, you know, late August, early September, that's maybe when we'll be seeing him, because there's a lot of guys on that staff in Miami. But, you know, injuries are a thing, and bad pitching coming from Hernandez might just get Max Meyer and his dominant season to the majors quicker than we initially expected. In my opinion, if he does get the call shortly, we could really be looking at this year's version of the 2021 Alec Manoah, an impact starter who ends up going, you know, six plus innings every appearance and helping your team all throughout the playoffs.
Yeah, I was going to say he could be 2021 Trevor Rogers.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
This is like an add now guy, 11 strikeouts per nine in AAA. Again, something that is going to probably translate to like high eight, low nine strikeouts per nine in MLB. Great slider. He's getting a ton of grounders in AAA. Good speculative ad right now in like 10, 12, 15 team mix. So that's our rookie review. Hope you enjoyed. Hope there's something in there for you that you can take away. So we'll be covering all the big news in baseball, the best players to drop an ad, streamers, and more. So make sure you subscribe and tune in so you're notified when episodes publish every Wednesday. In the meantime, you can tweet us at FastballPod, reach out to us on Instagram at FastballFantasyBaseball, or email us at FastballFantasyBaseball@gmail.com, and we'll respond. We'll shout you out on the show. So send us your questions. You can also find my column By the Numbers at Fantasy Pros every Thursday. So check that out. And then finally, please give the show a 5-star rating. Each high rating helps move this podcast up the list on all the podcast platforms when people search for fantasy baseball. So it really helps us out. Thanks for listening.